Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Friendships, as Cicero tells us in his work on friendship, involve a certain kind of equality, but they're often between people who are not equal in every respect. And if we think about human beings and the ways in which they vary and the sorts of relationships they inevitably enter into with each other, this is actually quite common. One friend may be more intelligent than the other friend or have more athletic ability or better connections, whether through their own affability and forming other friendships or through their family connections. A person may be rich or poor. There could be all sorts of other ways in which friends are going to differ from each other. And Cicero isn't the first person to discuss this. As a matter of fact, this plays a major role in discussion of what we call unequal friendships in Aristotle's Nicomachean and Eudaimonian Ethics. So there's already some, you might say, advice and rules and thinking about this in place by the time that Cicero approaches it. The person who he is having talk about this, Laelius, looks to Scipio, his old friend, as sort of a shining example of somebody who excels just about everybody else and yet is friends with many people. And he's taking some advice from him. So we've got this issue of superiority and inferiority. And Cicero says it's of the utmost importance in friendship that superior and inferior should stand on an equality. So, you know, this doesn't mean like perfectly strict equality. It's parem, right? They have to be equal in some way, or they have to be similar in some way. It doesn't mean that you have to measure everything out exactly, but there has to be some rough equalization going on here. Now, he does say that sometimes a preeminence, excellentiae, notice the plural there, quaedam, can exist. And Scipio is a prime example of that. Even though Scipio tried to be more or less an equal to everybody, he kind of stood out, right? And so, you know, you could think about a seminar being led by a really great professor and everybody's being invited in there and we're all on a first name basis. Let's talk like peers. And yet there's a recognition, well, this person clearly stands head and shoulders above the rest of us. So there can be preeminence, but the person who's engaging in that isn't lording it over anybody. And we can say superiority in what Cicero, the focus that he has, he talks at one point about virtue, he talks about intellect and genium, right, our mental capacities, moral virtue, mental capacities. And then fortune would include not just, you know, how things are turning out for us right now, but all the goods of fortune, wealth, power, authority, access, social status, all of these sorts of things that fit in with that. These are things where we can vary and a person can be superior to another. So the person who's superior, what should they do? Cicero gives us some very useful guidelines for this. He says that a superior person in a relationship like this is actually going to help the inferior person materially and in terms of honor and influence. And he has a very nice example here, which, you know, we may have a little bit hard time relating to, but in the ancient Greek legends, which were also shared by the Romans and many other ancient peoples, there were cases of demigods. These were kids who were essentially half god, half human. And usually the way that it would work is, you know, Zeus was the biggest offender when it comes to this, but also, you know, you've got other gods like Apollo and I think Poseidon and some of the others, every once in a while getting it on with a human female who might not be married. If she is married, of course, the kid gets brought up and the dad's like, wow, my kid is really great. But the, you know, the mother knows that, you know, he's not actually the father. Sometimes it's a virgin as well. And the big point about this is that sometimes these are fostered. They're given to shepherds to take care of. And you've got this kid who's pretty amazing, you know, these Greek heroes, and they do all these wonderful things, and yet they remember dear old mom and dad, right? And they're not thinking dad, usually like dad in the sky. They're thinking mom and dad who raised me, my adoptive parents. And Cicero says that men who've for a long time lived the life of menials because of their lineage and family were unknown, discovered and found to be the sons of gods or kings, nevertheless retain affection for the shepherds whom for many years they regarded as their parents, right? And such a feeling ought to be much stronger in the case of real and undoubted parents. So you see this, when people make it big, they often buy their mother or father a house or a nice car or pay off their debts or do things like that. If friends do that within the familial relationship, they can also do that within other relationships. And we could think indeed about some people, you know, great example are athletes who have paid off a significant amount of medical debts of the people within their community, or paying off student loans, things that are really holding people back. That is friend-like behavior on the part of a superior. The other thing that they do is they place themselves on a level with the inferior. This can be betokened in a number of different ways. For example, in languages that actually make a distinction between different forms of address, one might ask somebody to use a more intimate address, to say tu instead of vous in French, right? Being on a first name basis, that could be another thing, particularly if there's a lot of rigidity when it comes to that. Inviting people in and having them over for dinner and, you know, just asking them, well, go ahead and bring something, you know, a bottle of wine, some chips, something like that. I'll take care of everything else. As some of my friends used to say to me when I was in college, bring your eyes, bring your stomach. That was, I would ask if I should bring anything, and they said, no, just, you know, look at the food. And I suppose they should have said, bring your nose as well. The irony is these are all my Chinese friends. And so, you know, they were cooking and making amazing dishes. And, you know, they just wanted to share that with me. At that time, I didn't know how to cook, but I wasn't cooking and bringing in the sort of things that they were. So the superior person places themselves. It's not that they're lowering themselves, and it's not that they're faking anything. It's rather that they're inviting the others to be on the same level as them. They're treating the others as if they matter, as if they count just as much. Now, Cicero also thinks that the inferior person has some guidelines for how they ought to behave as well. And the number one has to do with their feelings. They shouldn't grieve. And the word there is dolere, literally to feel pain or sadness. We might also think about modalities of emotion like envy as well. They shouldn't grieve about the fact that they are surpassed by the superior. You know, they should recognize that it's not taking anything away from them that the other person is doing well, that the other person has developed virtue to a greater extent, that the other person is more intelligent or prudent than them in certain ways, or has different skills, you know. Another example of this would be, I have a lot of friends who are musicians. I am, you know, an amateur musician. I've never done much other than play in a few bands that never went anywhere, and I don't practice enough. And I can, you know, recognize that my friends who have excelled within the field, and I'm fortunate to have some who can earn a living doing that and have done so for decades, I can look at their stuff and not feel bad about what's underdeveloped on my side. Even if I put in the time and the work, I probably would never be as good as them. As a matter of fact, one of my good friends had a really interesting saying one time. He was assessing his own capacities. He was a bassist in quite a few heavy metal bands, first in New York and then in LA, and then developed a clothing line, then became a drug counselor. He's done a lot of different things in his life. But just thinking in the field of music, we were talking about, you know, how much time and effort he had put in practice. And he said, you know, and this will be a reference that people will get if they understand the world of heavy metal. He said, I was never going to be Steve Harris good. Now, Steve Harris is the band leader and the bassist of one of the most successful metal bands of all time, in large part due to his own work, but also his companions and teammates, you could say. Iron Maiden right? So if you've ever heard his amazing bass lines holding everything together, that's Steve Harris. He is so good that even in the 1980s, jazz bassists were saying, wow, this guy's good. Instead, my friend said, I never aimed to be Steve Harris good. It was enough if I was Nikki Sixx good. Nikki Sixx is, of course, the bassist of Motley Crue. And Motley Crue is not a band that you look at and say, wow, now that's some amazing bass playing. But you say, that's solid bass playing. It's okay. It's not stratospheric amazing. It's not the top of the game, but it's not the bottom either. It's right in the middle, doing a good job and creating good music, doing the sort of work that a bassist ought to do. If we want to throw in some others, we could talk about, you know, Cliff Williams of AC/DC, who plays some very, very simple bass lines and said, you know, a lot of people get on my case and say, why are you only playing eighth notes on the root? And he said, that's exactly what we needed for the band. So it appears that he's like an inferior bassist by comparison to Nikki Sixx, let alone Steve Harris. He's not actually. He's doing what's required for his band. And so not being upset with oneself because one's capacities or one's contributions are not as big as everybody else. Cliff Williams would be an example of somebody who is, in fact, a good friend, right? Within that framework of the band. He also says that there shouldn't be a focus on trying to be recognized for making their contributions. And he says that a very disagreeable class of people are those who are ever obtruding their own services, which ought to be kept in mind by him for whom they were performed and should not be mentioned by him who performed them. As therefore in friendship, those who are superior should lower themselves, so in a measure should they lift their inferiors. There are certain people who render friendships disagreeable by thinking themselves slighted, right? So if I'm in a friendship with somebody who's, say, superior to me, let's say that they're a collaborator and we're working on a book together, which is sometimes, you know, been the case for me. I've done some collaborative writing projects. Let's say this person I recognize, I'm really the junior partner in this friendship. They are way smarter than I am. Like, for example, if I was going to write a book with Chris Gill about Hellenistic philosophy, oh, okay, you know, I mean, I'm bringing much less to the table than he is. Right? But we can still be involved. Now, if I'm like insisting that my bits and pieces that I'm putting into the book be recognized, and that maybe I should even get like first billing in the title or something like that, I'm being a jerk. I'm actually trying to overlook the fact that the superior person has come down to my level, and I'm trying to actually go up above them. And that's not a good thing. So Cicero, to bring this to a close, gives us a general rule about how we ought to handle the inevitable inequalities within friendship. And he says that, in the first place, we should render to each friend as much aid as we can. So what we're able to do. This is going to vary from person to person, right? And then he says, in the second place, as much as he whom you love and assist has the capacity to bear. You can't always give everything to everybody. Some people, maybe at a certain time or during a period of their life, can't necessarily accept that help that you would give them. And so you have to be able to recognize that. And so friendship has to have a certain kind of flexibility to its rule that allows superior and inferior to come together in a sort of equality. But this is not something that you can decide once and for all. It's probably going to take some upkeep and maintenance and attention over time in order to keep the things equalized out to, you might say, keep it on an even keel. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.